From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made a few years ago with a conversation. The leaders of Rochester's Open Door Mission wanted to know how they could expand their impact, and the conversation was centered on the 2,000 or so students in the Rochester City School District who are technically homeless. That number now, 2,300, and it includes students with no permanent address. That means sometimes they're on the street, often they're staying on the couches or floors of relatives or family friends. They're not likely to have two parents in their lives, often they're with their moms trying to get by. And as you might imagine, more than 2,000 homeless students means many of them are chronically absent. They won't graduate, and you can see where this is going. And so the Open Door Mission is raising private funds to open a new residential care facility for women and their children. It would operate in the 19th Ward, which happens to be where a sizable number of the homeless students are registered for school. Next month, the city of Rochester will have the chance to decide whether this plan should be approved. Now, there's been some opposition from neighbors, and today I've invited the leaders of the Open Door Mission to come on the program and explain exactly what they want to do and why. And let me welcome my guests for the hour. The executive director of Open Door Mission is Michael Hennessy. Mike, it's nice to have you back.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
It's Mike and Mike today. Mike Belmont's here. Mike's the development director. It's nice to see you here, Mike.
Great to be here, Evan.
And Anna Valeria Eisman is here, the executive administrator of Open Door Mission. Anna, nice to see you.
Thanks for having us.
We go back a couple of years, and you know, I think one of the most important parts of this conversation and one of the most important questions centers on what you do want to do and what it is not, by the way, Mike. So let's start with this question. It's not a shelter.
Nope.
Why is it not a shelter, and what's the distinction?
It's not a shelter because a shelter is classified as a structure that has dormitory-style beds. It has, daily bed assignments, and the purpose of a shelter is to have, 30-day, 60-day max stays. What this is a, like you said, a residential care facility. It's highly structured residential supportive housing program for women and children with a strict program to help women and children get stabilized from these places where they're considered homeless by the McKinney-Vento Act that says they don't have a permanent address. They may be couch surfing with a relative. They may be sleeping in a car. But they're in a crisis environment. The kids aren't getting a healthy school night. And we just believe if we can get these moms and their kids into a stabilized, structured program for 6, 9, 12 months of a year, depending on the family, some will be sooner than others, and get these kids, these chronically absent kids, K through 3, 42% chronically absent within the school district. Those are the kids you see on a Bolton Vargas knocking on the door looking for these kids in the paper. If we can get these kids back into school, their moms in the strength-based program that helps them identify their strengths and then let us shore up those weaknesses, whether it's parenting skills or job skills or cooking skills, financial skills. How do we get them stabilized so they can get it in a healthy school night environment, stay with us for a year after that, where we can do case management with them, continue to support them over a two-year period, mm-hmm. and get these moms and their families stabilized.
All right, so throughout this hour, we're going to talk about what that 2 years would look like, because Open Door Mission has really mapped out what it would be from essentially the moment you come in the door and then what happens going forward. So Mike Belmont, I think it's important also to mention here that that this is a plan that you've been trying to communicate with neighbors around. It's going to go in what is now a church that is moving out. Tell us about sort of the neighborhood, where it's going to be, and where what the building is.
Yeah, we're actually really excited. It's in the 19th Ward. 531 Post Avenue is an old Episcopal church, Evan. It has had a few churches in and out of there over time. Half the building, it was built in the 20s, and the other half in the 50s. It's just shy of 30,000 square feet or so in there. It's a wonderful place to be. One of the keys is that the women and children would be in a neighborhood. So if they want to kind of see and experience this kind of care, this kind of renewed structure, it's important that it be in a neighborhood, okay, not in some warehouse somewhere. We need to provide a place that shows these women and their families dignity, right? So when we stumbled upon the building, we said, wow, it was kind of the perfect storm. You know, it's a church moving out, it's available, the price was good, needs a lot of work. So we're ready. You know, I'm the development guy. I tell everybody I have the easiest job at the Open Door Mission, right? I get to have fun and go have breakfast and ask people like you for money. I'm not doing that on air today. We'll do that offline. But the bottom line is that, you know, Rochester is an extraordinarily kind community. There are extraordinarily kind people in the 19th Ward. It's been a great neighborhood, and it's growing, and there's a bridge to the U of R, and there's things going on in Brooks, and there's things happening. We think it's a great place for these women to see people who own their homes and neighbors that care. And so we're raising some money to do this. It's a first phase, about $1.5 million project, and we got over half of that committed right now. And we're going to hopefully receive what's known as a special use permit from the City of Rochester's Planning Commission, which would be required for us to have a residential care facility, which is listed in the city code as one of the kind of definitions of this type of support program. So we're gonna cross that hurdle successfully, we hope, and with the kindness of the people in Rochester, the mission's 98.68 or something percent privately funded, has been for 63 years now, thanks to the good people of Rochester, and we'll continue these good works at that site, I hope.
Well, let me also make sure that I clarify an important point here, because I think Mike Hennessy, you mentioned to me in conversation this morning that this was also not just a facility that seems like a good fit, as Mike Belmont is saying, but it makes sense in the 19th Ward because a sizable number of the kids who are technically homeless in the City of Rochester School District, more than 2,000, are registered to school in the 19th Ward, right?
200 of the 2,000, or 10%.
About 10%.
Are already in the neighborhood with their moms or grandmas, whoever they're couch surfing with, or in the neighborhood.
So they're there already.
They're there already. We don't have to bring anybody in to start. We're going to start with four families in the phase one, and we believe we can probably find four families that were of the 200 kids who are in the 19th Ward already and bring them into a structured facility in a lovely neighborhood that they're already in, that we can, expose them to the local meat market and the local businesses up and down Thurston and show them exactly how they can become part of the community. And I know that the 19th Ward takes a lot of pride in the fact that they have 80% home ownership throughout the course of the 19th Ward. It's not that high in our neighborhood. It's a lot lower, but we're trying to change that and bring some moms and their kids in who could be eventually part of that home ownership and driving that up to 81 and 82%.
Okay, let me ask Anna Valeria Eisman a question then on the outreach now to women. And I'm curious to know, you know, for people who see the guys going in and out of the Open Door Mission. In fact, every time I drive to WXXI, I wave to you guys as I go by, and I see the guys go in. You're reaching out to, in particular, moms and their children. Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about the need, but how would you describe why Open Door is reaching out particularly to women?
Well, first of all, because there is a need. And second of all, because we've seen success in the men's program. And we know that, you know, there are certain ways that we do things, first of all, being faith-based. We think that's a really key element to what we're doing. And we know that these women are sort of an invisible population. And one thing that the mission works with is invisible populations in the community. So, like, with these particular women, they're not being counted by sort of standard government data collection procedures. So homeless counts are done, and these students are not included in those homeless counts. So therefore, they're not receiving the support that they need to, you know, to actually get ahead in school. And we see, you can't open the paper, you know, look on a local website without seeing Rochester top another list of poverty and child poverty and poor education. So we really want to jump in and really try to get our hands dirty and, you know, and start addressing this issue.
So this facility would eventually, if things pan out, if you can raise the funds and you get the approval from the city, it could eventually have, my understanding, looking at the plans, 20 family units. So mm-hmm. So maybe the room for maybe 20 moms, roughly 60 people. And Mike Hennessy, how does that fit in the neighborhood where it's going? Again, you may have some neighbors who've had concerns about the number of people who would be there. Is it a fit? is it the right population for the site? How is it? How would it fit in your mind if it's a capacity?
I do think it would fit because we are talking about 20 moms. This is a 21,000 plus square foot facility, has a seating for 200 in the chapel, has a former chapel that's now a gym that would have seating for the same 200. This is a building that was built to house, not to house, but to accommodate up to 400 people. We're going to have about, you know, we have a model that shows with 20 moms, and some have one kid, some have two, 50 people. There may be 60. But we think that it fits very well. There's a lot of open space. We have a 1,500 square foot gymnasium for kids to play in during the winter and an access area. We have another 1,500 square foot chapel that it will be used for multi-purpose. We have plans for a playground in the middle of the courtyard. It's kind of a U-shape, so we have an outdoor site plan for kids to be able to have access and play outside. So we believe that the structure is quite large enough to handle this amount of people, and of course city code will decide that. The city and their code decides how many people can fit into how many square feet, so they won't let us put more in there than it'll accommodate. But we believe that it's the right place because we're trying to get these women out of a crisis situation within the community and back into the community in a healthy environment, and what better place to do it than in a place where they can be called home in the future.
Anna?
Yeah, so just to add to that, in terms of how the program would actually fit into the neighborhood, you know, so, you know, because we have been asked that question. And first of all, like Mike said before, it is a structured program. It's not just sort of come in and come out as you please. All of these women will come in and the families will have a strengths assessment upon initial arrival. And then they will be setting goals and will be together working on whatever it is that they need to get out of that, you know, out of the program, move on to independence. And so that being said, kids are going to be in school, moms are going to be, whether they're going to work or programs of their own, they will be, you know, going about their business as anyone else would do in a community neighborhood. But we'll also be taking it further and being actively engaged in the neighborhood, bringing folks into the neighborhood to do classes and workshops and recreational activities with the kids. And so, you know, they'll be walking the kids up the street to the playgrounds or parks, and, you know, so they'll be an active part of the community and also a structured part of the community. So it won't be seen as, you know, it's not like it's going to be 20 families coming in and out all the time that, you know, I think we want to prevent that.
Well, and this has been, and the folks at Open Door Mission shared this with me this morning, this has been studied in terms of the impact on the community around it. Furman Center in New York, NYU's Furman Center took a look at this, at the impact of supportive housing on surrounding neighborhoods. They took a look at New York City, which is not Rochester, but there's obviously plenty of similarities there. And, you know, Mike Belmont, we won't get into every single detail, but what's sort of the summation of what Furman found is the impact on a neighborhood?
Well, I just quote, you know, their one of their findings. It says, you know, our research finds little evidence to support neighbors' fears that supportive housing developments will reduce the price surrounding properties over time. Quite frankly, you know, these folks at NYU and the Furman Center, you know, went out and kind of had an open-ended type of a research approach as they looked at various supportive housing and programmatic housing initiatives. And, you know, people know this about me, but I'm a data geek. And so thank you, University of Rochester. And, you know, it's very clear that, you know, and there's some dependencies and interdependencies, right? So if we have a building, for example, like 531 Post Avenue, and there's some construction going on around, it's low level and whatever, very little negative impact initially under construction phase. We're not ripping up roads and all that kind of stuff. So you have this stable scenario. Then the place gets nicer, right? People look at it and all this. And that's what the Furman study's doing. And it shows clearly that there's significant, statistically significant increase in the values of the homes around, and I don't remember the distances, but within blocks, let's just say. A tenth of a mile radius is where we invite people we have for our forums that we're having. But it shows an increase. And if you take a look at the property values that are listed, public record, in this portion, the Post Avenue portion of the 19th Ward, there's a significant disparity in property values in this particular neighborhood compared to the 19th Ward at large. And if I could find the data in front of me somewhere, I will. But I think it bodes well for everyone if we become part of the neighborhood. And there's about a $20,000 average. So there's some numbers, sales prices in this block from 2013 to 2015 that show an average of $44,000-ish.
So the average house there is $44,000.
Correct.
And in the 19th Ward, writ large, it's
65,
more like $65,000.
Right. So what we're banking on, okay, pun intended here, what we're banking on is that the same type of analysis and the same kind of realities that were shown to us from NYU and the Furman Center, that we can have a positive impact, and you know, all the boats in the lock will rise now, right? And so that's really hopeful, because we want these women and their families, hopefully down the line when they're stabilized, to become homeowners in the neighborhood. Wouldn't that be cool?
Absolutely. And for anyone who wants to call with questions or concerns, again, what Open Door Mission is saying is not that, hey, we found a great place for this residential care facility for women and their children, and we hope the neighborhood can tolerate it. And what they're saying is this actually may be good for everybody, for homeowners, for the neighborhood, for the women and their kids, for the Rochester City School District. But if you've got questions or concerns and they've been trying to address those, you can call the program today. It's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. It's a church now, and if Open Door Mission convinces the city and the city next month says thumbs up, it's going to become this residential care facility. And I want to hit a couple of other important points here. We're talking about 20 family units at capacity. So we're talking about maybe 60 people, you know, maybe 40 kids, I guess, something along those lines at capacity. 40 kids in a district that has more than 2,000 who are technically homeless, who don't have a permanent address, and again, maybe sleeping in cars, on floors, couches, different residences week to week or sometimes night to night. First of all, that is heartbreaking to hear that there is that many.
It is to us.
I mean, that is a really, really troubling number. I think 2,300 was the latest number I saw. Where did I think Willie Lightfoot quoted that? Willie Joe Lightfoot's the assistant Democratic leader from Monroe County Legislature, and he wrote a letter of support for this project last month, and he quoted 2,300 homeless children. So is that the latest number?
Yes.
We use 2,000 because it usually starts out around 1,500 to 1,800 at the beginning of the school year, and by the end of the school year, it caps out at 2,300 because they identify more and more as they go through the school year.
Got it. So roughly on average 2,000. That should be a troubling number. I don't care if you live in the suburb. I don't care if you live in a different area code. The health of the city of Rochester should matter to us, and that should be really troubling. But Mike Belmont, this morning we talked about the fact that even long term, 40 kids. You know, some people might say that's the gnat on the elephant. And is that impactful? What's your answer to those who may be skeptical that even these big projects might feel small when you look at the size of the problem?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think first and foremost, we all have to realize that we have to start somewhere and mean it, Evan. You know, people smarter and wiser than us have said, you know, look at the impact of one life. Who knows? You know, I don't want to over-sensationalize things, right? But for many years, I was an educator in this town at a little school in Penfield, served inner-city kids. Heard the same thing in 91 when that school started. You know, wow, you got 45 or 50 kids, what do you think? Well, it grew to 500 over time. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to grow this residential care facility that way, but maybe down the line, there'll be another one in the 10th Ward or another one somewhere else. So we have to start somewhere. And I think that it's very important that we do so in community. We do so in relation to one another. So if we think about this, let's say it's 20 moms in a year and a half, and it's 40 in 3 years, and keep going with the algorithm, right? Keep going with the trend. How many kids? Maybe two each. And how many lives can we affect then? And we have to start somewhere. So we start small. We do things well. We care. We show the same kind of hospitality that my grandma, Nana Rose, showed when she took people into her house in Frankfort, New York, when I was a kid. And we stay with them, and we care, and we don't give up. and we ask the members of the community to join us to do the same. And we show them the meat market, and we show them the corner store, and we show them the care and the people in the community. And guess what? Maybe it's like walking in, singing a Bar Alice's restaurant, and walking out. I don't know. But we're going to give it a shot, and we're going to do it because I think we need the care, and there is a crisis. So one at a time, one life at a time, my friend.
I think of it this way. You know, right now, you know, we have these children. So 42% of these kids, K through 3, are chronically absent from school. So, you know, what's 40% of 2,000? About 800 kids are chronically absent from school right now if they're all from this population. And good sense indicates most of them are. If we don't intervene, if someone doesn't intervene with these kids, we're gonna long for the good old days when we had a 44% graduation rate, because these kids are, that's a lot of kids not to graduate before they leave the third grade. And we need to intervene with these kids now. And if we can only intervene with a dozen or so to start, well, so be it. We'll start with a dozen, and we'll get it right, and we'll get them helped, and then we'll work on a dozen more. And let's not hate small beginnings.
Let me get our first phone call, and it's the Mike Hour. This is Mike in Greece. Go ahead, Mike. You're on with Mike, and Anna.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
So my question basically centers around accountability and sustainability, because if there's a 44% rate as it is now, and we start off with a dozen saving, it's great. I'm not detracting from that at all. But is there a point of no return in the sense that we need to make the parents accountable instead of government accountable for the kids being in school? So, therefore, if we take on this adage that we're going to take and fix this problem or help to fix this problem, are we just artificially creating an environment where they have housing, they have a school, and the success rate doesn't meet our expectations? So if it doesn't meet the expectations, would it end, or would it be another hole where we just throw more money at it? And as we are now, $19,000 a year per student in the state of New York in education expenses, to when the national average is $11,500.
Mike, I think it's a great question, and I appreciate it. And I think our panel is ready to tackle it in many different ways. Mm-hmm. Anna, I'll start with you. Go ahead.
Well, to start, first of all, this program is centered around not only strengthening the families, centered around strengthening the families, and that includes educating and encouraging mom to be involved in her children's education, and to be not only accountable for her children's education, but also to teach them how to become accountable for their own educations and succeed and understand the value and the joy in learning and succeeding. We're going to actually track our families that come through and ensure that these kids go on to graduate. We want to see our graduation rate from kids that come to our program, if it's 9 months, if it's a year, however long they're with us, we want to know that down the road, that seed has been planted in education, that they will be graduating. And that's another mom and another kid in the Rochester City School District that's actually joyously invested in their education and can share that with others as well.
Okay. Mike Belmont?
Well, to the economics, we're looking not to tap into the tax base here in relation to government funding and things of that sort. We're not carving out money that otherwise should go to a public school. We are looking to friends and kind people to give toward this initiative. It's a privately funded scenario, and together with that comes flexibility to maybe do some things and program in ways that infuse our approach with faith. The Open Door Mission is a Christian organization. And so there's a faith base. There's a kind of comprehensive and holistic approach. And there is plenty of examples of programs that have been done in this way that show marked, significant, long-term success, so that what our caller with a great question is saying, hey, man, you know, is this a bucket with holes in it? You know, are we trying to bail this boat with a bucket with holes in it? No. I think that if we do the kinds of things that we are committed to doing, and we do a lot and a little, and we have a very, very flat organization here, and every penny counts, and we do it in a way that Anna is describing, we will see the long-term success, and we could begin to maybe inspire others to do the same.
I also want to point out a couple of things here. The beginning of the hour, we addressed the question that I think a lot of neighbors have had, and I understand it, and I'm sure Mike Hennessy has heard it many times. Is this a shelter? It's not a shelter. It's a long-term care facility. It's a long-term residential facility. And the difference being that they're investing months, if not 2 years, in trying to address individual needs. And so, fairly or not, in this community, especially in the last 18 months, it seems, there have been a lot of conversations about the homeless population and what is helping and what is enabling. And Mike Hennessy, there's a little bit of that tone in Mike from Greece's question, where he said, are we essentially propping someone up in a way that is not sustainable? And I know that that is a concept that you've been thinking about at Open Door Mission even before this women's facility was
sure.
envisioned.
Well, you use the E word there. You're brave. You know, the word enablement in some communities can be a word that people don't like to use, but exactly right. Our goal is not to enable anyone. It's to lift someone up. And I can assure, what's the gentleman's
Mike.
Name? I can assure Mike that, you know, if this doesn't produce positive results, then my funders will stop supporting it immediately.
I'll make my job really
we'll
hard.
Do something else. This is free market capitalism, and the donors will stop funding a program that doesn't work. I wanted to point out back how it's not a shelter again, just because it was on my mind before you asked the question, is we would never put a shelter here.
Yeah.
This shelter needs to be on a very high traffic, high density street. It would be dumb to put it on an obscure corner like mm-hmm. this. But to get back to that sustainability question, the sustainability part is easy. This is a population that is not being served by the general safety net now. We believe we're allowing us to come in and be the safety net for this safety net, for this place where we think there's a gaping hole. When you talk about 2,000 kids that aren't being served by the system, that's a hole in the system, and it's okay. Because we're private, nimble enough to be the safety net for that crack in the system. And this is an approach that hasn't been tried with this population before. This isn't just pouring money, bad money after old money after good. It's starting with a new concept, with a new entity that does things differently, holistic and comprehensively, faith included, over long periods of time. This kind of program, the reason it's not done a lot, Evan, is because when you take a residential program like this and put people in housing and take care of food and clothing and everything that they need for a year is you know, the equivalent program out there is anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000 a month, and that's why you don't see it a lot. But our donors are coming to us and saying, this is the kind of program that we need to make a difference. We'll fund it. Go do it. That's what we're trying to do. And we have a track record with our men's program, our long-term residential programs that have a 60% success rate when it comes to sobriety over chronic addiction. So we have track record in doing this, and we're very confident about our results.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about what is, in one sense, one building in one small part of a community, but I think it is a larger issue that we're trying to talk about today. And if you want to call the program, you can call it toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. It's at Evan Dawson on Twitter. The folks from Open Door Mission held an event this past Monday night talking about just questions that neighbors might have. They're going to have another one Saturday, September 12th from 9 to 11 a.m. And that's at the current Episcopal Church down on Post Avenue. So it's at the future site of what this facility would be. Currently, it's in the Episcopal Church at 531 Post Avenue. So that's on Saturday, September 12th in the morning. When we come back, we're going to answer a few of your questions that have come in online, as in, how is someone accepted into this? That was a question we just got on Twitter. We'll talk about that. And we will also talk about some of the way the program will work week to week and month to month. So let's talk about that after this short break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we take a look at the video released yesterday of Hillary Clinton speaking at length to members of the Boston chapter of the Black Lives Matter movement. What is it that Hillary Clinton said that has some optimistic and some concerned? We're going to talk about solutions, the way forward, how political change is achieved, and more next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Wine Symposium of the Finger Lakes, August 21st and 22nd in downtown Geneva. Events include winemakers' luncheons featuring regional chefs, local cuisine, and Finger Lakes wines. Information and tickets at winesymposiumfingerlakes.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson from Open Door Mission. Mike Hennessy, the executive director, Mike Belmont, the development director, and Anna Valeria Eisman, the executive administrator. They are all here answering your questions as we talk about their proposal for helping really many single women and children, especially the kids who are technically homeless and students in the Rochester City School District. This is Cindy in Rochester. Go ahead, Cindy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and I just wanted to follow up on something that you someone said earlier, that this might just be the gnat on the elephant, and I would just want to offer that maybe if we could change our perception and think about it from the women and her children's point of view, this is the whole elephant, and maybe we just need to change the way we think about things.
Amen.
And thank you for taking my call. I'll listen to your comments off air.
Well, Cindy, first of all, thank you very much for the very thoughtful comment there. And let me also say, as the host, I was drawing the analogy not at all to ever sort of minimize an individual experience, but to look at sort of just, unfortunately, sometimes I think what Cindy's saying is we look at people as numbers and statistics, and that can be dangerous. And I take the point entirely. I'm looking at 2,300 kids currently listed homeless, and this is a facility that could help 40 at a time. And the natural question that some would have is that enough? And the point that they're trying to make is, you do it step by step, person by person. So, but any quick thoughts on Cindy's comments there?
I think you said it.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. I think that's it. And truth be told, certainly, each individual, each mom, each child, each man that we serve, each little girl, little boy, I mean, absolutely precious, in all of our sights. And we need to do the very best for them. And I think we talk about sustainability, right? You put somebody up and you give them what they need, and you do that for a while. But as Anna can tell us better than I could, over the course of time, you begin giving them a place of dignity and care to show them how they can be accountable, and how that accountability and how that responsibility and how that integrity, and they feel dignity again, and what that does to someone's head and heart in life. So we help them to move and become personally responsible and effective, meaningful members of their community again.
And it rekindles hope, and that's why Anna has taught us that it has to be a strength-based system. It has to be a system that says, what are your strengths? What is it about you and your children and your family that we can build on? All God's people have gifts and talents, and let's find the gifts and talents. Let's stop focusing on the barriers to getting to a stable place and focus on your strength, and we can independently win custom with every family because we are private and can maneuver without outside of the systems. We can spend individual time doing custom programs for each family to meet every need, so that we can do it individually, not as a group, and actually have the right outcomes come for each family. And that's why it's a 6 to 9 to 1 year to 2 year program, because it allows for that.
And just to encourage Cindy a little bit as well, this program has been informed by those stories. It's been informed by the stories that I experienced in my days as a case manager with incredibly high caseloads that included dozens and dozens and probably hundreds of women and children watching their stories and just, you know, my heart breaking with theirs as we were trying to figure out what we could possibly do to help them and just really not having anywhere to go in certain situations. So this program, this whole plan is being informed by that. And actually some of those folks that were previous clients of mine have actually are part of, you know, who I contact and say, hey, how about this? How about this? And, you know, their stories are working through this.
All right, if you're waiting on the phone, and I see the phone ringing again, no, we will get to you in just a moment. I do want to address one question from Twitter where Mark wants to know who is taken in and why, and would you kick anyone out? I think that's two separate questions. So let's start with who is taken in for this kind of a facility. Anna?
Yeah, so we're going to be working directly with the school district's homeless program. And they will be going through an intake process. The woman who is the liaison for the homeless program is on our Women's and Children's Advisory Committee. So she knows, she's been part of this process from the beginning. She knows exactly what the program is going to look like. So she will really have that sort of firsthand knowledge as to who is, what families are ready and appropriate for this type of care. And she will then refer them to us. And then the second question
is, would you kick anyone out?
Would you kick anyone out? Well, the way the program works is that there will certainly be expectations. You're living in a community, you're living with children in the building. There's going to be expectations of the program. So if someone chooses not to abide by those expectations and, you know, to the point of causing harm or potential, you know, unsafety for another family, they would be choosing to leave the program. You know, we're not going to have a rule, you know, walk around with a, you know, a clipboard and kick people out if we're seeing them, you know, chew gum or something. It's going to be much more deep than that.
It's a grace-based system. Yes. And there's always mm-hmm. grace. And, you know, we need to, when there's an issue that someone is choosing not to agree to the agreement that they made to come into the program, because there will be a highly structured mm-hmm. intake process that they'll agree to become part of the program. And when they start making choices and decisions that are not consistent with that, then we'll work with them on those. As much, we don't want to lose anybody from this program. Sure. And but it, eventually, yes, people choose to leave the program based on not complying with it.
That's not much different than your current setup.
Correct.
At Open Door, is it, Mike?
That's exactly how it works with the men.
Yeah. Okay. Back to the phones, and this is Nick in Clifton Springs. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I am living out in Clifton Springs, but I grew up in the ward, actually just down the street from the church. And as it happens, my daughter is currently a senior at the U of R and living down on the other end of the ward, down by Genesee Street, Woodbrook. So my question is, she's involved in a sorority, and they do a lot of social work on campus, and they try and do some outreach things into the community.
Awesome.
Has the mission considered tapping into the resources there, both the kids who want to be socially engaged and the School of Education, maybe, to provide other resources for these women and their families?
What's your daughter's number?
We'll call the sorority.
Yeah. Now we work with four to 500 volunteers per month now, and you know, that's what we're going to be looking for: engagement and volunteers. And you know, that's how you can support a $10,000 a month program without $10,000 a month, with the volunteer support and those that come down that help us in the community, that help us and pull this off every day. And so we'd love to work with the different groups throughout the U of R and church groups and corporate groups. And we want to bring women in and to come in and love these kids, you know, on the weekends and different activities going on, because that's part of what is missing in their life, is that love and that nurturing that comes from people who really care about them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I work in special ed myself, and there's my daughter down there. So I will mention this to her and see if she can get it pushed around. But I would certainly encourage you folks to reach out to the Greek organizations as a starting point, and maybe the School of Education, and see what can happen.
Nick, thank you. And that's a good reminder to the host to let our audience know that there is a timeline that at least, I think, nothing is ever perfectly on schedule, but maybe it will be in this case. And so you've got a case now where next month, about a month from now, the city of Rochester could make a decision regarding whether this plan gets green-lighted or not. If it does, they've already raised roughly half of the $1.5 million for the first phase. Is that right, Mike Belma?
Yeah, we have commitments for that, absolutely.
Okay, and then you go forward, and what would sort of be an opening, a first opening kind of be?
Well, we're looking at best-case scenario would be probably late next spring, and we'll move from there. You know, and it's, you know, certainly there are a lot of things in the Gantt chart, you know, that have to work together. So hopefully it'll go better than expected, but we're prepared that, you know, we'll find a glitch or something inside a wall somewhere that might need a little more time. But I think with respect to having the funding in place, we're just ridiculously blessed to have the people that have come around this project as they have, and putting their hard-earned money behind it is a big deal. And I just want to say something about the connection with the U of R, right? You know, close there in the 19th Ward. There were all kinds of people when I was a student there as an undergrad, then a graduate student a couple times over, and a Warner School grad, by the way, the School of Education. And there's a lot of great connections. There's a lot of people that come now and help from the University of Rochester at the Mission now. So our caller from Clifton Springs and his daughter, they don't have to wait to help out. There's a lot of ways to get involved now. There's a women's boutique at our Caring Center, 156 Plymouth. There's a variety of different ways that they could call in and get involved now. They don't have to wait. So it's great. We have a kind community. U of R is another wonderful group of people that give.
Opendoormission.com/volunteer, and you fill out applications right there, and we can get back to you real quick.
I think Paige in Rochester, who was waiting on line 3, but we don't have her anymore, she was going to ask about volunteering or employment opportunities. And I think you just answered that question, Mike Hennessy.
Opendoormission.com/volunteer and fill out an application, either a one-time volunteer or a mission-driven volunteer if you think you might want to do something more regularly. And we'll work towards finding you your perfect slot.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to the folks from Open Door Mission about their plans to build a residential care facility for women and their children. And we say build, essentially they're taking what is currently an Episcopal church on Post Avenue, that's in Rochester's 19th Ward. The church is moving out, and they would turn that into a residential care facility for women and their children. And the timeline, you bring in women, and the first 1 to 3 months are what you call relief. And what's the short definition of what relief would be?
Relief is essentially addressing any sort of immediate issues that need to be addressed. So basically food, shelter, clothing, you know, make sure that in medical, you know, health and safety issues, all of that. And then during that phase is when we do a strengths assessment, and that'll be for mom and kids and family. So that's when we're going to start looking at what are you bringing to the table? What's your piece of this program? And, you know, and go from there and set a plan from there.
Okay. And then the next two phases are estimated to take about 6 to 9 months, and they are called restoration and development. Mm-hmm. Restoration, how do you define restoration?
Restoration will be capitalizing on those strengths and dealing with, you know, and addressing how to move forward. So whether it's getting a GED, building a resume, maybe, you know, paying off some debt, whatever, you know, it's going to look different for every single family, but it's going to be all based on those strengths and how to take those strengths to the next level. And then the development phase is going to be essentially implementing everything that they've been doing in the first 6 months. And that goes extends through 12 months after the family has graduated the program. So once the family graduates the program and they're living independently out in the community, they become the leader of their, you know, of their program. And we become the support to just show up month to month and make sure that everything is in place, everyone's doing okay, just to ensure that, you know that they have that support. So they're going to have built a resource network around them while they're with us. Part of their program is actually developing, you know, whether it's reconnecting with family, connecting with a church. So they have their own sort of support system built in, and our job from then on is just to be another support piece.
All right, this is Bill and Victor. Been waiting. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I've been kind of in and out of hearing this, but when you were talking about the expectations of your clients, and then you speak of it being a faith-based program, I'm wondering what happens if you get clients referred to you who are not Christians and who are not interested in being proselytized. What happens?
Well, I would say that, again, there's a very highly structured intake program for and referral system for those to come into this program. We are a faith-based organization. We're chartered in New York as a religious organization. We don't make any excuses or apologies for it. That's who we are. That's why we exist. We're a religious organization. We're a Christian religious organization. So basically, someone who comes in, when we're talked about that, we're, you know, the program includes Bible studies and chapel services, and those are the things that are part of the program, they would make that choice at this time whether or not they would want to be a part of a program like that.
Okay. And if they're telling you they're not interested, then that's not what you do, right? I mean, that's essentially, again, right. Mike, you've used the term that they would be choosing not to be part of the program.
Right. And if someone's a different religion other than a Christian religion, and they wanted to, with that knowledge of what the program is, and they wanted to join the program, then we would accept them.
Okay. Let me get back to the phones. And this is Eleanor in Greece. Go ahead, Eleanor.
Well, I'm calling because it sounds like there are 2,300 children just wandering around, floating around without any tethers. They are all part of some kind of a family, whether it's a mother that has them in her custody or a grandmother. And this points to the fact that to really begin to serve these people and give them stability, we need a lot more of affordable housing. And Pathstone has been doing a good job of building affordable housing in the city. I would like to add that as another very good solution to the problem of children without roots. Is that what you mean by homeless children? I assume that they're not on their own totally.
Eleanor, thanks for the phone call. And to clear up, I've tried repeatedly on this during this hour to make it clear that when we say homeless, it's technically homeless. They may be living in a car. They may be living sort of on a couch or on a floor of a relative's house or their mom's friend. It may be the same place for a while. It may be this different place night to night or week to week. Mike Hennessy, is that about right?
Yeah, and there's different circumstances, and they may be couch surfing with grandma or an aunt, but these people that will eventually are candidates for our program are in crisis. They're not in school. They're not getting a healthy night's homework, school night. They are in need of a program that can help stabilize their lives long enough for them to get footing, to get to the next level of a quality living environment. So we're not going to pull any kids out of healthy environments. We're only going to help kids who are ready and moms who are ready to, if only they had a healthy environment to be into, then they could get to the next level, and that's our target.
Let me just jump in, only because we're starting to run out of time. Eleanor pointing out as well that she thinks affordable housing is a big piece in helping people who are either homeless, technically homeless, in crisis, and that's nothing new to Open Door. That's nothing new to the many people in our community who work with the homeless population. And as the Anti-Poverty Initiative looks at ways to help the community, I'm sure they will look at that. Mike Hennessy, do we have enough affordable housing in this community to help people?
Oh, no, we always need more affordable housing, absolutely. And, you know, we've seen a lot of the Housing First and Rapid Rehousing initiatives. We see that it works for some. We see that it doesn't work for many, and that a lot of folks just need housing next is what we talk about. And I always put it this way. I have 40 guys that stay in a shelter that came from an apartment or a house, and if they were able to navigate what's necessary to stay in an apartment or a house, they'd be in the one they left. So they need a stabilization period first to deal with whatever issues got them out of the house or apartment they were in, and then they're ready for another healthy apartment or house. So we believe in Housing Next. Housing First has its place. It's certainly isn't the end-all to the homeless population, but it's part of it, and Pathstone is a great organization to do that.
Okay, Anna?
Yeah, and just to add to that, you know, the affordable housing issue is certainly a large one. And one of the things that we're seeing, though, is that of the need for sort of crisis housing needs in the county, over 60% of those needs come from the breakdown of an immediate family relationship. Over 60% of those housing needs don't necessarily come that sort of lack of housing. Do we need more affordable housing? Yes. We also need more people who can afford housing. So we want to, you know, this program is designed, these women are going to leave this program independent of the need for subsidized housing and will be able to afford the housing on their own.
And that's a tall mission, pardon the term there, but that is that's a big challenge. And so
it's hard work.
Some final thoughts, Mike Belmont, we haven't heard from you in a few minutes. You get the final word here on what you want our community to know, especially anybody who is feeling like they have doubts. I know you've got another meeting coming up on Saturday, September 12th from 9 to 11 a.m. at the Episcopal Church there on Post Avenue. What are some final thoughts, 30 seconds?
It really takes concerted effort of a caring community. Okay, Rochester, if people don't know it, was voted twice over and 50 years removed as the kind of city in America. And it is, contrary to what we see sometimes in the news every day with violence and things of that sort. Light, a little bit, dispels a lot of darkness, pal. Good overcomes evil. I think we really need to band together and stop the political whining and say, hey, who's important? Women, children, men, women, our neighbors, the poor, the rich. Black people, white people, tall people, short people.
Well, thank you, Michael. That's I appreciate it. And again, if you missed part of the conversation, they've got a lot coming up in the next month. We'll talk to you as you go forward. Mike Belmont, Mike Hennessy, Anna, thank you so much.
Thank you.
From the Open Door Mission. Short break and more connections next.